Kim Schaefer, your organization, AUFORC, AUFORC, is that the way you pronounce it?
Close enough.
It's going good, isn't it?
It's off to a wonderful start, Jerry.
Yeah, that's the reason I said it that way.
It's also a great start. We get a few new members every week, and the membership's growing, and interest is growing in the organization.
Well, I know on our UFO file sightings report, we gave a report given to you from somebody in Kansas. So that toll-free number's working.
Well, hopefully it'll work better than it has been. I think it has rang once since then on. So,
Well, let's give it. Maybe we can get some numbers.
historically, January and February are really, really slow months in ufology. And this thing, I believe that a toll-free number may cause some people to, that otherwise would not call, a UFO reporting center would call in because of the fact that it's free.
Oh, I understand. But what is the number exactly? It's 1-888 what?
Got it written. I haven't called it myself.
You're like me. I always have to look up my number. Everybody looks at you like, huh?
I know my home phone number. That's about it. The number is 1-888-338-1478.
Of course, we have that on the website as well for people to, and your website, we have a link there. You've kind of updated that thing. You got some interesting things there.
I have really expanded that site and intend to do very much more. We posted some exclusive videos today that no one else has on the internet. A couple of good videos from Wisconsin. A gentleman named Sean Lundblade that I was in touch with.
Yeah, I know Sean.
I don't know if he happened to give Larry these videos or not, but he told me that.
No, he probably didn't. You probably have an exclusive.
Evidently, I do. And of course, sadly, it's Wisconsin is out of the Appalachian UFO Research Center's coverage area of the network. But we're fortunate enough.
Well, basically, what states are we going to be talking about there?
Okay, what we wanted to do originally with this idea, Jerry, it's really unique. And as you know, I may have told you before about the network. When I was the MUFON state director for Tennessee, I physically sat down at the computer and I looked up sheriff's departments, police departments, FAA office.
Yeah, we did a broadcast about that at one time.
Addresses and I mailed letters to all these places and told these people, hey, we're here. If you get these reports coming in, we need those. And refer these people to us and we'll investigate your sightings and we know how to do it. And takes no manpower, no time on your department's part or your company's part or whatever, we'll do it. And the average for the state of Tennessee previous to that was four sightings a year. Last year, we received 130 sighting reports. Now, of course, of these, a lot of them were misidentifications, and I did post all the ones that I felt, deserved a second look, if you will. I have networked Virginia. Virginia, the letters for the network have been mailed out as of Monday this week. North Carolina's next. We're going to do South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi. And for the short term, you're looking at the cost of us doing this is between $50 and $100 a state. And the membership, of course, through donations and purchase of stamps and so forth, we contact all these places in these states and get these networks set up. And they do work. They're proven to work by Tennessee as a model. And if it works out in the Southeast, we may expand into the Northeast, and who knows? Eventually the whole United States. But
Well, it seems to me that the Mid-South could use a network of sightings being reported like you're setting up. Seems to be kind of virgin territory in many ways, even though there are lots of sightings.
well. Jerry, you know yourself being in the broadcast industry. There's a certain stigma attached to people in the South as a whole. And if you listen to Coast to Coast and you hear Art or George, you know, they never take calls from the South. And if they do, there's...
Well, I'm a son of the South, too, so we take calls.
You know that the stigma still exists. And as unfortunate as it is, you know, people in the South are no less intelligent than people in Nevada or California or whatever. And, you know, get friends with programs the same way. And, you know, I think the world of Jeff, I think the world of Art and George have been on all other shows, but I still know that the stigma exists, especially for the West Coast. And the South is neglected not only for that reason, but the interest in the South, you know, it being in the Bible Belt too, has a real impact on whether or not these sites are reported, I think. And we want to change that, and we want to start with the South, not only because I'm here, but because the resources for doing this are here. The people, a lot of the people that have joined are, in fact, MUFON members also. I have 3 MUFON state directors who are members of our organization. And we don't want to steal this stuff from MUFON. We want to share it with the MUFON CMS or the new reporting system. We want to cooperate, if you will, with...
Well, I mustn't tell you, and you know this for a fact. In Carolina, there seems to be a haven for black triangles.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, if somebody's neglecting the South... As far as sightings of UFOs, they're missing a bet.
Yeah.
And so you're writing that, and that's correct. That's a good thing to do, and we'll do anything we can to help you. I know you've had some pretty intriguing cases.
We've had some wonderful cases.
Over the years, and we can talk to Sidney Doherty here in a little bit. He was one of your discoveries.
Probably the most fantastic case I was ever honored to work. And, you know, I think we fairly well did the case 100% right. And, you know, I don't want to say the book's closed on his case because, Sidney, as, you know, after you interviewed him, I believe you'll agree that his experiences go way beyond the Black Triangle encounter of last year. Medical reasons, various things that happened to him, before, during, and after this close encounter. Intriguing case.
Yes, it is, and we urge people to stay tuned because that's coming up here in a little bit.
Sidney is going to fill you in this time, jury, on some things that have taken place with him medically, and I believe you'll find them very, very intriguing.
I understand that, and a lot of things have happened to him since that encounter. Well, we'll get back to Sidney and let him tell us a little bit about it in his own words in a little bit. I know you've been getting some TV coverage. Channel 4 out of Nashville did a good job.
Yeah, they actually did, and, you know, nothing derogatory in the story whatsoever. Also, Kingsport Times, which is a local paper here in Upper East Tennessee, did a really nice story on what we're trying to do here, and we look at it like this. You know, before I mentioned the stigma about the South, there's also a stigma for locally, regionally, as far as UFOs are concerned, and we like to think that we're projecting an image, and I hope we are, that this is a professional organization, and we're not going to assume anything, and we're going to be right 110% of the time. And if it's a misidentification, we're going to make sure that it's known to be such, and if it's unidentified, we're also going to ensure that is made known. And we know a phenomenon exists. You know it, I know it, most people listen to your program know that a phenomenon exists, but to prove it to some people, they would have to be landed on.
Well, then they still might deny it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the long and short of it is you've expanded now to Virginia.
and into North Carolina next.
And now I believe Sidney's sighting occurred in rural Virginia?
Right on the state line. He was actually in Virginia when this encounter had taken place, just a few miles off Interstate 81.
The reason I ask you that is, did that have any bearing on why you went to Virginia first before some of these other states? I mean,
not really. I'm just a few miles from the line myself.
Okay.
You know, I can almost throw a rock to Virginia from where I live. It was a case that I must say had been neglected by MUFON, and there hadn't been a sighting investigated in that state in many years, and the MUFON state director's inactive.
So you thought they needed it?
Yeah, it really needs the UFO organization in that state. So we went there first.
So it's official. The toll-free number is operating. It's 1-888-338-1478.
And carry an online reporting form if you live outside the southeastern United States. And the only thing we ask is if people live outside our coverage area, which is the immediate southeast, that they use the online reporting form or an email contact. And not use the toll-free number, because it's, to be honest with you, it's very expensive.
Yeah, it runs about 22 cents a minute or so.
Yeah, and that, of course...
A lot of people don't understand that.
Yeah, we
they think, hey, that's a free number, but somebody has to pay for it.
Exactly, and we rely on donations to pay for the website and for the number and so forth.
Are you getting any donations?
We've received a few.
Okay, so you could use some help in that area.
Absolutely, we are looking at wanting to have the network done in the southeast by the end of this year. And like I say, the cost of each state is between $50 and $100. And our operating costs per month are, you know, less than $30. So, you know, I could pay that myself. And of course, I would love to think I could network all these states myself. But my wife would no doubt find me somewhere else to live.
Yeah, I understand. Now, the website is www.auforc.com.
Yes.
And we have a link to that as well. And as you say, you have some exclusive video there.
Absolutely.
In fact, we borrowed some audio from your website for a show we did the other day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got a pretty good website going there, Ken.
And, well, thank you. And, you know, one of the links on it, to my favorite UFO links, is JerryPippin.com. It's also a very wonderful, wonderful website.
Okay, Mutual Admiration Society.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're gonna go and talk to Sidney, and then when we come back, wrap it up with you. Basically, have you had any other sightings similar to Sidney's? I mean, this was a giant flying triangle. Very, what would you say, 50 feet over his head?
He stated that he could have thrown a stone and hit it. Evidently, it was less than 100 feet off of the road and away from his car and all that.
Mm-hmm.
He also stated this thing blocked out the entire sky, so... You're looking at a very huge object. Needless to say, it was close enough to actually do him physical harm.
Yeah, and he had some damage done, and we'll talk to him about that. Kim, we'll be back to talk to you in a moment. Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine. Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Well, on the phone we have Sydney Doherty, and Sydney, I've heard a lot about you. I feel like I know you.
Well, thanks, Jerry. Yeah, I've heard a lot about you, a lot of good.
Well, I'm going to say that was all good for you about you too. So it's a mutual admiration society already.
Yes, sir.
And that's a good way to start. You're in Kingsport, Tennessee now, or near there anyway.
Yes, sir, right outside of Kingsport, Sullivan Park.
Now, this is not where this incident happened, was it?
No, sir. It's up, I own a house up in Topanga, too.
Yeah, you were up, what'd you do, have a house up there or something?
Yes, sir. We own a house up there. My wife just inherited this house. Her father died years ago. We just remodeled it and got moved in down here this past year. We've lived up there at the time.
Yeah, now I want to get into as much of the story as you feel like telling us, but I think... Even though people may have heard our interview with Kim Schaefer originally about this, it wouldn't hurt to start all over with the original incident. Or I don't even know if that was the original incident, though. You may have had...
No, it started back in 2004, actually.
What happened back there?
February 2004 was a strange year for me and my family. It started out February. My son and my nephew, we were downtown Kingsport at my brother-in-law's house. My son and my nephew came inside. They just come out and looked at the pretty lights in the sky. And, I guess it was around, probably around 4 or 5 o'clock. I can't remember the exact time, but it was on a Sunday.
4 or 5 in the afternoon?
Yes, sir.
So it's daylight?
Yes, sir, it's daylight. And the moon was out. A full moon during the day, or right at a full moon during the day.
Mm-hmm.
My son came in the office, and I come outside, and I couldn't see nothing at first. And I said, let me get my glasses. And I put my glasses on, and six of the prettiest lights and everything straight up right below the moon, off to the east, over toward the airport, Tri-City Airport, from where I was standing. And I called my brother-in-law and sister-in-law out, and neighbors came out, we were looking at it. We stared at these objects for about 20 minutes, and during that time there was three smaller objects that flew over by us. Just looked like little cigars. And six lights, there were three big lights, three small lights, come out, fly around the bigger lights, come up to them, and they were dancing around in the sky. We thought it was pretty cool, and I called Channel 11 News, told them, called the airport. No, I called the airport the next day because at about the same time there was a plane crash. And I asked them if there was nothing involved with the lights of the plane, and that's how I got introduced to Kim. They referred me to Kim. And when I talked to him, he said, believe me or not, he said, this won't be your last sight, but you'll see more. And lo and behold, it is.
Yeah, you know, Kim and I were talking about that a little earlier. It seems once it starts, and it doesn't seem to stop. And I know you're pretty exasperated about it by now, and the listeners will understand why when we get into the story.
Yes, sir. As the time went on, I kept... after a second or third sighting, I started taking a camera with me before it went. And I had an incident picking up Flint, I think it was around May. I was hunting Flint at South Oakland Lake before the water was coming up. I think it might have been April. It was right before the water started rising in the lake. There was a bright orange, I called it a sunlight, or a small sun, what it looked like to me, that was just above the trees, off to my east again. And I watched it for a good 20 minutes or so before it went outside, and I reported that to him. And as time went on, I started having more and more sightings. My son came in one day off the bus, and he said, Dad, and I seen a disc in the sky. I said, what do you mean a disc? He said, it was a UFO, and it was chasing my bus. And he described it to me, and I reported to him. then in as summer went along, we were spending more time outside. I took him and my nephew to the wetlands at the water park.
Mm-hmm.
On the way back, I had taken the camera and was taking pictures of them all day. And on the way back, they fell asleep in the back seat. I was coming up the interstate, and my radio started straightening out. And I reached down to tune my radio in, and out of the corner of my left eye, I seen a shiny object coming across. And it had was coming faster than I was. I was doing about 65 miles an hour. And I grabbed it, reached over, get my camera, my digital camera, and I turned it on, and it takes a few seconds for it to come up. As it came up, it was crossing the interstate, and I started snapping pictures at it. And I got one picture of it in the frame. I had several pictures, but only one picture of it, and it was three. Like three globes, they call it a tri-globed object. And I got like 7 or 8 pictures snapped before it went outside. I couldn't get off that. And it went outside. By the time I got stopped, it was gone. And I go home and download the pictures, and there it is. And I said, you know. But one thing that happened before it, I forgot to mention, is that March, after my February died, I woke up on a Wednesday morning blind as bad.
You couldn't see anything.
And I thought it was at night that the lights were out. And my vision started coming back. And this was before then. Tri-globe dog. I went to the eye doctor and I had a hemorrhage in my retina, on my right side. Just a hole was pretty complete in my retina. And he referred me to a neurosurgeon, and they took a CAT scan of my eyes and my brain, and they said it was a tumor, and it was about the size of a BB, and it was so deep down that they couldn't get into the box, but they wanted to keep an eye on it and check it for growth, for changes in shape and stuff like that. And over a several-month period, they done a CAT scan on me. And my eyes started to get better. I started seeing better. And they were going to send me to Vanderbilt University.
Yes, sir. They're in Nashville.
Yes, sir. And they took another set of CAT scans, and it was gone. And I asked them, I said, is this bad news? You know, what's happened? And they said, well, we don't think it was a tumor. Everybody told me that it was, had me ready for chemo and everything else. They couldn't explain to me why I was gone. And then after that incident, they came to try a load dog. And then, after that, there were several.
Now, how's your vision today?
I'm legally blind in my right eye.
Okay.
And I'm having to wear glasses. My vision changed. About every 6 months, I had 6 months glasses. And they can't explain to me why I'm losing my vision. I don't have diabetes. I'm not too old a person. I'm 43 years old. And the eye doctors, I've asked them flat out what caused it. We don't know. We don't know why it's retina.
And the one you're legally blind in, that eye, it was retina damage.
Yes, sir. There's a hole in the retina.
Mm-hmm.
And directly behind it, the tumor, sort of deeper down into my brain. And I had been pretty well tore up for a long time. And started to have time for it going by. And still had some sightings. Some little sightings here and there. Skipped several minor sightings after that to get to the triangle sighting, which was in October, I'm pretty sure, 2004.
So basically, there for 8 months or so, you were seeing UFOs on a regular basis.
Yes, sir. Well, if you want to call them that, it's like this, I've got pictures of the military. Was around a lot of aircraft, helicopters, jets, and bombers. And, I wasn't in the Air Force, I was in the Army, so I was pretty good helicopters. And I actually seen Space Show blow up once, so I've seen that. And the things that have been seen are good to explain. I've got a picture of the ship that I took.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I call them UFOs because they're identified. And the big sighting kept going through the whole year of 2004. And right toward the apex, 2004, I was coming home in October from a music concert that I was. On a Saturday.
You're a musician.
Yes, sir. Play music semi-professionally. I'm a disabled veteran. Where I've got hurt in service. But I play music on the side semi-professionally. I have a CD out. Try to play music when that's possible. And early in the morning, that morning coming in, it's right before daylight. I was driving home. I was coming up, going toward my home in Virginia. I was coming up a back road, an old single lane back road.
Now this is out in the middle of, pardon the expression, but nowhere.
Yes, sir, out the post office. It's out there. I've got one neighbor up at that house. There's no house around it. It's just one neighbor. But there's houses, you know, it's kind of through there, but they're spread out way. I noticed a light in the sky that looked like a fire. And it looked like the sun, and half of the sun turned upside down.
Hey, when it was this 4 or 5 in the morning?
Yes, sir. Right about, I guess around 5:30.
It was still dark, though.
Yes, sir. It was right before daylight.
Yes, and so the fire in the sky, you just thought it was a fire on the mountainside.
Well, yeah, because it was right at the tip of a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Or right at the top of a, not a mountain, but a hill. And I knew where the hill was, or I couldn't see the trees or nothing, but I knew where it was at. And I slowed down and looked at it, caught my eye. And I said, "Well, that's not no fire." And I kept looking for it as I was driving, went out of sight. Come up to a stop sign to make a left turn onto another road. And when I make that left turn, I'm still looking. I'm driving, I'm looking up at the sky, lights. And I had to go up the hill way, sort of made a turn, a bend toward the right, started downhill the way. As I make it up that hill and around that bend, they caught my eye. And I was watching it, and just within a few hundred yards of the stop sign. And I pull up to the stop sign, and I'm watching the light start coming towards me. And I get out of the car. And I stop and look at it, and this thing's strange. It's not silent. This thing makes loud noise. I've never heard anything like it. Not like a city. Not like rotor blades.
Was that an electronic hum type thing?
It was strange, like a street train.
And it was gigantic.
Yes, sir. As it got closer, it was huge. And I watched.
Could you make out anything on it?
Yes, sir. When it got up to me, I noticed that there was three orange lights on the bottom of it. And this thing, even though it was making such a loud noise, it was going pretty slow. And as it got closer, it was like a...
This noise hurt your ears?
No, I don't believe to see it.
Uh-huh. It was just loud.
It's just loud.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt something.
You could probably feel the vibration on your skin.
You know, I was asked that. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was vibration or what it was, but the way I described it to him was that I felt hot and cold at the same time, but not. I don't know if that makes sense. And I got scared. The hair, my hair was standing up. The hair on my arms was standing up. The hair on my, just like the frizz.
Now you were out there in the middle of nowhere by yourself.
Yes, sir.
Still dark. This gigantic thing was there. How close was it?
I could throw a rock and hit it. It was that close to me.
So you think 30, 40 feet?
I'd say maybe around 25, 30 feet up.
Wow.
I mean, that's the distance.
Could you make out the bottom of the craft? Were there like some sort of seams or anything on it, or is it smooth?
Yes, sir. It, when it came across me, what really struck my eye about it was that I described it was real. It was a structured craft, three orange lights as big as my car on the bottom of it, and the ribs were running across it. Now, the bottom of it looked to me like it was silver. And I stood and watched this thing, and it seemed to me like this for a few seconds. And I got so scared that I wanted to run. And I actually turned around, and I thought, like, well, geez, I've got a car here. Why should I run? And as I turned back to my car, I watched it, and it just turned. It doesn't bank, and it doesn't...
make kind of a right angle turn, you mean?
Sure, it's a turn. It starts off to the west, going out towards the west. And as it goes away from me, I can see the back side of it. And it was structured, and to me it looked like it was about 10 foot thick with these orange lights that looked like a half of a ball cut on the bottom of something, my glowing bright orange. And I could have chased it, Jerry. I could have chased that thing down the road and kept up with it, but I looked at it and I said, wow, that's a thing. And I got back to my car, didn't think no more about it. For at the time, all I wanted to do was go home to the base.
Yeah. Well, you'd had a tough day, and then this thing.
And I go home, and for me, it's, Kim has told me anything about me. That's one out of character for me. I've called him at 2 o'clock in the morning, I think, I mean, it was indescribable what it was. And I didn't even pick up my phone for calling. I go home and go to bed. And I get up the next afternoon and wasn't feeling good at all. And I called Kim. I said, hey, man, what are you doing? He said, what's up, Joe? How you doing? Man, I feel bad. I said, I got to tell you what So I told him, he says, would you sure come over to the house? I said, no, and I drive over to his house. And he examined me. And I was like sunburned on my face, on my back, and on my shoulders. And
So it was some sort of radiation burn, probably.
Well, I think so. I don't know. I know my hair was falling out. I was dead. In his house, I said, look at this, and I just reached up and grabbed my hair, and I had shoulder length hair, a little bit longer shoulder length hair, and grabbed my hair and pulled out, you know, a half handful of hair. Feel bad. You need to go to the doctor. I said, what should I tell them? If I go to the doctor, you know, what do I tell them? I said, they're going to either laugh me out of the emergency room or call down the psychiatric ward and have me stand. And he said, man, I know what you're talking about. It was the thing of my own.
So how long were you feeling bad?
About 5 days. I felt bad for a while, but it kept progressing with it.
Have you ever had that check?
Yeah, I've been to the doctor several times after that. And there's other things come up that's been wrong with me.
Before these incidents, you didn't have any health problems?
Not real bad health problems. I've always had
Other than the disability from the Army.
Right. Other than that, that's like what's going on now.
It's still going on.
Yeah, my health is progressively getting worse. Don't know why. I was just diagnosed about 6 weeks ago having bone cancer. Well, they said they think it's bone cancer. They found something on my right fixed rib. When they showed it to me from the CAT scan, it was ruptured oxygen attached to my rib bone that wasn't there years ago. As far back as 2 years ago, it wasn't there because it constantly x-rayed me because of my back. And now they found this on my ribs. My doctor had me sent for a bone scan, and they don't know what it is. your rate. I've had things go wrong all of a sudden with me, like my prostate all of a sudden.
Now, when we talk about these things, and they all of a sudden happened after the sightings, and especially this close encounter, have you had bad dreams? Like, I mean, was there any missing time or anything there on that road?
Yes, sir. There was, and I really didn't pay no attention to it. So Pam asked me, he said, did you notice anything wrong with the watch? Well, I think I did have reached the watch. And it was like 15 or 20 minutes off. And didn't really think that bad until we got into discussions about it. While we were living, while this missed time incident happened, we were still living in the city. There were things that would wake me up in the middle of the night. For instance, I was laying in bed with my son, and he was going to school the next morning. And I went to bed with him, and even up there, he was afraid of wind. For some reason, he hated to be around the wind. So he was in bed with me, and I lay down with him. And I was laying with my face against, or towards the wall opposite of the door. And just lay down with him, and then lay down 5 minutes, and I hear his son sound. And I sit there and listen to it for a few seconds. Opened my eyes, and my little boy's laying right face against me. And I was turned towards him, and he was turned towards me. And as I opened my eyes, there's a beam of light coming down, hit him right in the head.
A beam of light through the window or through the from the ceiling? Or?
It looked like it was so quick and so fast, it looked like it was coming out of the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
But it was toward the window. It may have been coming through the window. But my first instinct when I seen his forehead lit up and the light hit him, I threw my hand over the light.
And what happened?
It went away.
The light went away immediately.
It was gone. And I started having anxiety attacks.
By that, you mean you felt like something's wrong, but you couldn't put your finger on it?
Sir, and it got to a point, even now, I'm always armed. I'm armed with a weapon. A pistol or a rifle. I'm always walking around.
Well, I mean, I don't know if we should talk about this on the air, but I hear you shot at the thing.
Yes, sir. I sure did. This was later on. I think this was maybe in December, November, December of 2004. I can't remember the date. After the light coming in on my son, and after there was another incident, I have the sound recorded on my other cell phone that it woke me up at night. And I grabbed my cell phone, and the back of the hill was lit up, sort of an orange color. I thought there was fire, but there was a sound.
Was that similar to the sound you heard out on the road?
No, sir. It's more of a lower pitch sound.
Mm-hmm.
The sound that I heard on the road was a real high strength pitch sound. And then there was another incident after that. I was sound asleep about around 6 o'clock in the morning. The sound comes across the house with me and my son and my dog up all at the same time. And I mean, it was a scream just like the sound that I heard that night on the road. And I grabbed my camera. My video camera, and I turned it on, and you can tell I'm asleep, and I'm stumbling, and I'm trying to figure out where the sound's coming from. I'm thinking, did you hear that? I look out the window, and right behind my house is a bright, bright light that's looking like a spark. And I feel this thing, excuse me, for, I don't know, a good 30 minutes. I actually set the camera up on a tripod.
So you had time. It didn't go away. Could you tell how big that object was?
Well, from where I was standing now, it was probably about the size of an apple.
Tell me about the dog.
Well, that's another strange story. My dog, he picked me. It got to the point that I went sleeping in bed. And my son started staying down here at Kingsport.
So everybody was in bed with you? The dog and the boy.
I got to the point that I wouldn't sleep in my bedroom because, like I said, I have one neighbor. And on my bedroom side of the house, there's no house. And it's dark, my widow.
Mm-hmm.
And on the vent side of the house, my neighbor is, my next door neighbor, and they have street lights.
So you felt safer over there?
Well, yeah, I did. I actually did. I really, it didn't occur to me until, later on, I kept talking to him about it. And he said, did you ever think that maybe it's because the neighbor died and there's nothing on the other side of the house? And I said, well, no, I really didn't think of that because I wouldn't sleep in my bed for a while. My dog was, all of a sudden, jump up and start barking and throwing off the bed. He would go to the door and look toward the bedroom. He would wait to get up. He wouldn't go into the living room or go toward the bedroom. He would sit there and bark.
Did you ever go in the living room?
Yeah. That's right. I said.
Would you see anything there?
No. Didn't see anything. Didn't hear nothing. Didn't see nothing. And I would carry a pistol with me. Well, first off, I started carrying my high-powered rifle. I got a Enfield 308. I still carry it today in my car when I go.
Is that what you shot at the UFO with?
Yes, sir.
You think you hit it?
Well, it got gone pretty quick. Don't know if I hit it or not. I was actually on the phone with him. And
did you hear any noise?
I didn't hear a sound. The dog was barking that night that happened. The dog started going to see it. And, matter of fact, I was talking to him on the phone.
Yeah, he told me about that.
The dog started throwing a fit. I said, you hear that? You hear that dog bark? I said, I'm going outside and I'm going to look. And I grabbed my gun. And I go outside and looking into my backyard, it has an apple tree. There's a red ball. I described it as an eye. That's the only way I could describe it. It was an oval shape, almost egg shape. It was red with a goldish, orange, gold-colored outline. About the size of, a little bit smaller than a basketball, maybe.
Uh-huh.
And within 60 feet of it. And I'm looking at this thing, and I'm describing it. And I said, wait. I said, it's gone. Went behind, it was moved. And it went behind the tree. I said, boy, I said, Tim, hold on. And I raised my rifle up. I said, I want you. And I raised my rifle up. And as it poked back around the tree again, I shot. And it was gone.
Blinked out?
Yes, sir. I could actually see the trail of it. The way that it went. It was up quick, but I could see like a trail of it. No smoke or nothing like that. But way that it went, it went off to the west, from the east to the west, and was gone, within a tenth of a second. Faster than it was gone.
Well, what, do you think you've had any encounters with beings of some sort?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Your dreams, do you dream of strange creatures?
No. Well, no, really. No, I don't. I have weird dreams. I can't remember them when I wake up. I was afraid, or I used to be. I'm not no more. It all went away. I would wake up anxiety attack. I'd wake up afraid.
You can usually feel this coming on.
No.
Okay.
It was actually I just sleep and wake up from.
Okay.
Almost terrified.
You've got some serious health problems because of this. I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
Yeah.
You'd probably like to be able to say it's the U.S. government, so you could get some help. But
that's the strange thing about that too. When you mentioned that, curious. When Kim posted that sighting on the website, he had more hits from government agencies. He had hits from Boeing and Lockheed Martin, different kind of government weights. And him being the webmaster, he's tracking.
Yes, uh-huh.
And he even posted that on his website. I forget, I think it's close to 800 maybe, of this different government weights. Checking out what I've described.
What do you make of it? It's been you've been living with this thing since 2004. This is 2006, almost 2 years.
Abruptly as it started, it ended that quickly. I don't know what to make of it. I can say my life's come back to normal. I sleep better now. I go around.
So you really feel perhaps that this thing is over, these events for you?
I had a not long ago, I called him and I said, you won't believe what you said. What me and my wife were getting out of the car and my backyard was a silver deer. He said, what do you mean in the backyard? I said, this back was here. And it was right up behind my house. It was all, you know, landed on chart. I said, it was in my backyard. And I'm hollering at my wife to come and look at it. And by the time I holler and scream at her, she turned the corner of the house. It was going outside. And I said, it was gone that quick. And I said, it starts back up. I said, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I've got to be going to start back up. And we talked about it. He had talked to a psychiatrist, actually, or psychologist. I never did the hypnosis progression. And I really, to this day, I don't think that I want to know.
What about your wife? Has she had some experiences?
No. Well, now I take it back. Not long ago, she mentioned there's something woke me up. I said, what do you mean? And we kept the store down here, and I was upstairs, and I felt like on the desk upstairs watching TV. The next morning, she said, somebody woke me up like, what do you mean? They grabbed me by my ankle. And I pulled on it 3 times. Woke me up, pulled on my ankle, I didn't see anything, I said, no. And other than that, had a couple of sightings that you think that's nothing compared to what was my family.
How does she, she believes you, of course?
I believe she does to a point. And even when I'm talking to her, because they don't talk about this, you know, that. Which I agree, I don't want to talk about stuff like this around him and get him upset. But yeah, I believe she does, and I believe she hears her.
Now, since you've come back to Tennessee, closer to town, the things did follow you there for a while, right?
Yes, sir. I actually almost wrecked my car just right off the interstate coming from the house. We come up about 7-8 miles away from coming up the interstate on the interstate. I actually think I'm shooting out of an office. And I was talking to him on the phone while I was doing it, and I almost wrecked my car and got the video camera out and videotape. I get him the videotape to analyze and look at. There were 2 or 3 options that are on the videotape that night.
Now, are you still playing music?
Yes, sir. Not as much as I have been because I've got, believe it or not, there's 2 disc rests in my neck. I woke up about 6-8 weeks ago. I couldn't move my right arm.
And basically, the doctors just can't really explain this.
No. They can't explain my vision loss. They can't explain things. Tell me why I've got a hole in my retina. They can't explain to me why all of a sudden I've got 2 bullets of this in my neck that's impinging on the nerve roots, causing my arms to go numb. Things that are happening to they're trying to make excuses for, but they can't find it.
Now, your son, he's okay, health-wise?
Actually, no. Shortly after that, he started having asthma. I was actually diagnosed with it. He has to take two different kinds of inhalers and a pill a day. He has allergies now that he didn't have before.
Is your dog showing any ill effects?
Yeah, actually, I've had him put to bed, and his left hip, left rear.
Mm-hmm. Now the but your wife, she's escaped physical problems.
As far as
everybody knows.
Yeah, she's perfectly healthy. To the point now, though, there is calm down.
I think we're gonna hope that you're gonna get a little peace for a while.
Well, I hope.
And maybe these things will start healing.
Well, I hope.
Hope springs eternal, you know.
It got to the point that I thought I was going to start a nervous breakdown.
But you feel like you have a grasp of everything now.
Sir, everything's calmed down.
Now, how about, I know you did a interview with Eddie Middleton. You've done a couple others probably.
Yes, sir.
How do you feel about doing these interviews with us, the people? I'm
comfortable about it now.
Okay.
I don't feel like I'm going to be ridiculed. At first, even when I went to him.
Yeah, you were probably even reluctant to report it to him, and he's in that business.
Yes, sir. Was the first time I spoke to him, I looked at him, and I said, you're going to think I'm great. I said, I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't mention my name, but this is what I saw. And even up until later on after the triangle incident, I wouldn't even mention my name.
Yeah, we had talked to him about it at that time. He said you were just not going to do it.
Right.
I tell you, I do think, and I appreciate, and the courage that you are showing in talking publicly about this at this point. Unfortunately, I don't know exactly what we can do other than just get the truth out there, you know?
Well, that's all I want to do, really, is to, you know, let people know that these things need to happen. As far as me believing I was abducted, I'm going to say I don't believe it, because I can't explain things that happened, but I ain't seen no aliens. I've seen things in the sky I can't explain, things pretty close to us.
Yeah, really close up. How big do you think that triangle was?
Well, I can tell you from one point to another point, and me and Kim measured it, was over 300 feet.
Wow.
And it was at least a football field from tip to tip. And the orange balls on the bottom of it was as big as my car.
Well,
it was huge, and it was close.
Sidney Doherty, we wish you the luck. That you can have. You gotta have good luck now, we're thinking positive for you. That's all I can say.
Well, thank you, sir. I hope some benefits come out of this.
And stay in touch. I know you will with Kim. And if there's and hopefully, maybe in a year from now we can do another show and you can say, hey, nothing's happened.
Well, I sure hope so.
Okay, thank you very much.
I really did great if it starts up with Kim.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
It's going to be pretty traumatic. Just the whole idea of it, I'm sure, has really weighed heavily on your emotions.
Sir, it has. It really has. It's really taken a lot for me to even come out and talk about it. And that's why I really thank you and appreciate you for letting me get out and talk about this. And that, too, helps me be able to talk about it without being ridiculed, too. Exaggerate whatever, what people say.
Well, Sidney, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. We're all familiar with the famous Bose name when it comes to great sound. And now, Bose has made it possible to enjoy your iPod music and programs in the fullest possible fidelity. Just slip in the iPod into the docking cradle, and instantly you will have the famous Bose sound system playing your downloaded digital audio. By the way, the iPod charges as it plays on the Bose machines, so you always have the programming without interruption. Bose gives your programs from the internet vitality and realism, a full, rich sound. The Bose sound dock requires no adapters or wires. All you do is use one of the specifically designed iPod models. We have a banner on this page where you can click and go over and read about the Bose sound dock machine and the iPod. In fact, you can order it right here, right now, or in the future at your convenience. Bose and iPod, a marriage made in audio heaven. We'll be again talking with Kim Schaefer here of AUFRC. How do you pronounce it, Aufork?
Well, you know, Jerry, we're not really sure.
Okay.
Call it Aufork, maybe.
Okay, anyway, it's AUFORC.com, and you have you're in the process of setting up a network throughout the Mid-South and for sightings reports, and you've actually contacted airports, sheriff's departments, police departments, official places like that, and you'll be getting reports. I know in Tennessee you get reports from them now.
Yes. Yeah, the network's been in place in Tennessee for about 2 years now, and it works quite well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Sydney, and then we're going to have to wrap this up, and basically we're going to maybe cover something you're working on right now, but Sydney has really been impacted by this. You could tell the emotion in his voice. You know, he's not normally a violent man, but he's upset.
Well, you know, I guess, Jerry, that a person would have to live through what that gentleman has lived through to realize the anxiety that these encounters have caused him. And in particular, the one of last October. Then, of course, you know, previously with the worry over his son and his dog, and you know, all the things that have happened up to the time that he shot at the UFO that was in his backyard, and of course, hasn't been bothered since, which in itself is an enigma.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'd recommend shooting at these things. They might shoot back.
Well, you know, whether he admits it or not, he did, because myself, I was on the phone with him and one of our field investigators. We were on a freeway call with Sydney, and we were talking to him about things that had happened to him in the past several days. This was last fall, and no, I take that back. This was... Yeah, it was last fall. I was correct. And Sydney said, well, there's one outside. And it's behind this apple tree. He lived in rural Southwest Virginia in a very, very... I mean, where he lives, you can't see light in the next house. And here's this big red light. This guy, he's driving it to us, and Sydney's all excited. Well, he has a .308 British rifle, and he told us to hang on. I said, Sydney, don't do what I think you're going to do. And I said, that's not the way to handle this. I said, let's shoot it with camera. You know, let's get the video. He said, no, I've just had enough. And all of a sudden, you know.
You heard the gunshot.
Yeah. And he said, I hit it. He said, I hit it with gum. And he hasn't been bothered with one thing.
Amazing.
You know, was that a release for him? I have no answers because I thought these things were immune to bullets.
Now, how about other sightings there in the South? I mean, a lot of people have guns out in the woods, especially.
Oh, yeah.
Out in the hills. I'm surprised not more people shoot at.
Well, you know, folks probably do, Jerry, and we never hear about it, but I've never heard of another case of anybody actually opened fire on a UFO, but I'm sure it's happened many times.
And are you working on anything now that's intriguing?
Well, right now.
Or is it just a lull?
Historically, December, January, February are extremely, extremely slow months. You know, the last case we got.
Do you have snow on the ground?
I wish we did, but no, we don't.
Okay. Normally you do, though.
Yeah, this time of year usually it's been cold and cloudy and rainy, and if it's not 20 degrees and it's raining, so it's not UFO viewing weather.
Yeah.
But hopefully things should really pick up in late February into March. With more states in the network, I'm sure we will be overwhelmed with sightings.
What are the percentages of people you investigate with these sightings that are terrified as compared with just mystified or just don't have an answer?
A very small percentage of people are actually fearful. I know, I would say probably one out of 10. The other nine are either indifferent or curious.
You know, we always kid MUFON, and you were with them for a long time, and they do help us, and they've cooperated with us a lot. So when I say kid, basically mean that. They have a reputation of sightings more than abduction investigations or extraterrestrial sightings, you know. Have you ran across anyone that's seen an extraterrestrial, like a close encounter?
Well, I had a lady called me the other day from South Carolina, and she had told me that she had been abducted. And, you know, I listened to the whole story for a long, long time, but you know, I have no problem with that.
Well, I must say, and you'll agree with me, that these people, when they tell you these stories, you don't. I don't have the heart to cut them off short. I mean, they're feeling something.
Well, I mean, they believe something has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can't prove that it did or it didn't. And it's really hard sometimes to sit and listen to some of the horrific things that people describe having happened to them. And this lady in particular, you know, ended up in the hospital from an abduction that evidently lasted for several days and she was gone. And, of course, missing time case. And she had some really vivid memories of things that had happened to her that I can't even imagine could have been something else. You know, I would be honest. I'll be the first person to tell you I'm not a believer in the abduction phenomenon simply for the fact that it's not been proven to me yet. And I have been asked several times, do I believe in extraterrestrial aliens? Life visiting this planet, and for the news interview for the national station that I did back last fall, I said, well, you know, I've never met an alien yet, and when I do, you know, I believe a phenomenon exists, right? And I've accepted the fact that a phenomenon exists because I've seen it myself, but I have not seen the object, and I have not been abducted in the you know, if I experience these things for myself, I can become more of a believer.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I kind of, on the same track, I have been doing these shows for four decades, and I have yet to have one sit down in front of a microphone with me.
And although you know, like I do, I'm sure you do, you believe a phenomenon exists. You know a phenomenon exists.
Mm-hmm.
And you believe that these people believe they were abducted.
Well, I'm not calling them liars, and this is a fine line, but that's not what I'm saying. Something happened.
Oh, something definitely happened to these folks, and what it is an enigma, if you will.
Yeah, and it may be as they say.
Exactly.
Just as we say we don't have any proof it happened, we don't have any proof it didn't happen either, and some of these people do have physical scars.
Yeah. Well, if, for example, in a flyby case, and which is a simple UFO flew by, you know, folks didn't take photographs. We take these people at face value and their testimony. Now, if these people have fabricated a hoax or perpetrated a hoax, or whichever term you want to use, you know, that's something they have to live with. We, you know, we document the case and we investigate the case. And, of course, in a flyby case, there is no evidence beside the testimony. And, you know, it's ambiguous at best because of the fact that that's all it is. And, you know, you end up in a situation where you would have to put a profile of these folks as, what would you call it? You know, they would have to be profiled on the internet, in other words, so everyone would see who these people are, what they've done their whole life. Do they go to church? Do they vote?
You bring up an interesting point. You're from the South. Religion is important in that area of the country. How does that compare? I mean, you know, is there a conflict there in your mind between religion and UFOs?
I've seen it both ways, Jerry. There are people that are absolutely convinced that UFOs are foretold in the Bible and that they are cherubim, they are demons, they are any number of things that are described in the Bible. And then there are folks who, for lack of anything else, think that's the furthest thing from their mind, to associate these things with anything biblical, if you will. But it's about a 50-50 split. I've noticed, matter of fact, a lot of the MUFON members that were in Tennessee and, when I was state director, they got pretty upset because of Hall of Honor's speaking engagement we had 2 years ago at a meeting, and you know, a couple of them walked out. It was very unfortunate. But I don't know if you know who Paul Longwood is or not. He's a wonderful author. Has some wonderful ideas. A very, very, very nice gentleman. I've read his books. They're wonderful. But, you know, it deals with religion, and it deals with God and with extraterrestrial visitation. It's a possible connection.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And a few members didn't like that very much.
Yeah, I understand that, and we run across that quite a lot.
Yeah.
And every time we do a show with someone along that line, we do get reactions. Personally, I don't think that's necessarily contrary to what's in the Bible. The Bible may just left out some of the details, you know?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, we're talking about mankind in another world and time when 5,000 years ago, they didn't really understand what we understand.
I tried to explain that to the gentleman the other night. You know, you're looking at primitive writings. If they were given...
Even the most sophisticated person was not that sophisticated in matters of science.
When even if, and you know, not to dare even tread on that, because, you know, we really don't know, but if God handed word to man, and man penned that word, how do we know man got it right?
Well, you got a good point. It's one of the interesting things about the UFO field that I just wanted to ask you about. I had a chance to talk to you about that before. Basically, you're interested in sightings and experiences. People can call you at 1-888-338-1478 if they're in the Mid-South area. What would that be? Tennessee, Virginia, the Carolinas?
Yeah, Tennessee, Virginia, Carolinas, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi.
We look forward to working with you in the future. And I know your relationship with Sydney has grown over the months and years.
We'll keep a close eye on it, gentlemen, because I believe the story is not finished on this guy.
It seems that this stuff does occur to certain people.
It does, doesn't it?
Well, with that, we'll leave. Thanks very much again, Shazen. Talk to you later.